David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 414. I'm your host, Steve Raker, tripping the light fantastic like Professor X all patched into Cerebro. And let me tell you, true believer, it's wild. No wonder Charlie spends hours down here doing this. Marvel Noise is the podcast proudly sponsored by nobody, although kudos are always warranted to our crack support team at the Deliberate Noise Network that hosts our show, amongst many others. Thanks as always, Supreme Leader Derek Coward. On Marvel Noise, me, and usually Kevin and Andrew, who will be on in a bit, we talk about, well, anything Marvel-related, really. New comics, old comics, character publishing histories, creator spotlights, toys, movies, television shows, video games, and even conventions we visit in our Con Men segments. On that front, the last few years I've had to cut back on my con visits. New York Comic Con became way too expensive. Just the whole weekend. Lodging, food. Like, I want to spend my money on artwork, you know? And then a few years ago, after turning it into a family trip for a few years, which was a great dynamic, we stopped going to the Boston Comic Con, which, you know, later became Fan Expo Boston. That trip was frequently overlapping with our 10-day camping vacay every summer that we do in the Adirondacks, so it was really a tough mind shift to be, you know, camping for like 7 days in the lakeside woods to then switching to a big road trip and a hotel and a convention hall, you know, as much as we loved it. And now, after my oldest of two began undergrad and my bills are hitting from my brain rads last fall, it just didn't make sense to kind of selfishly go off and do my annual trip to the con in Baltimore this year, although it'll be the first I've missed in 13 years, I believe. But there's hope for me still, my fellow Morlocks, because all along I've had the pleasure of the easily accessible to me Albany Comic Book Show, aka the Albany Comic Con, which is a one-day, twice-a-year show that is super local to me, and even closer, now under 10 minutes in its new post-COVID location at the Polish Community Center here in Albany. I'll always be able to hit this show up, because, I mean, I make it a point. I've become friends with the owner of the show, John Belskis, and the regular group of creative individuals who appear, like everybody's pal Ron Mars, Sculptor Supreme Paul Harding, Jim Whiting, who's been my traveling companion to the last few Baltimore shows, inker and all-around artist Richard Clark, all who have become dear friends. Also at the show were artists who have attended shows in Albany in the past and have become acquaintances and were great to see and catch up with, like Bart Sears and Mike McCone and Paul Pelletier with Fred, Christian St. Pierre, John Hebert, Keith Champagne, and Mark McKenna. I bought a really neat, tightly inked Ilyana Rasputin magic headshot from Mike McCone that's on an envelope from the British Royal Mail, complete with a postal stamp featuring art by Mike, Kitty Pryde on mine. Different and kind of cool. The other piece of art I bought was from Paul Pelletier, who I hit up every year if I see him in Albany or in Baltimore or wherever. I always try to get one of his tightly penciled pieces, and this year I requested the Silver Surfer, and he, of course, knocked it out of the park. It was fun. At different times, both Ron Mars and Paul Harding each caught me asking if I'd seen the progress or the finished product on the Silver Surfer yet, and how great it was looking, cosmic background elements and all. Also at the show was Val Sameeks, who I'd briefly met once before. Gotta get a Conan piece from him sometime. The show seemed well attended, and the new venue seems adequate, with a working kitchen, taking orders, and beer. John puts on a good show year after year. Another cool dynamic at this June's show was having groups, three shifts in fact, of the new Diablo 4 video game developers present there and signing large promotional posters for fans, along with writers Ron Mars and David Rodriguez, who are both friends of mine, who worked on the game as part of the Albany-based development team with Vicarious Visions. Years ago, they made a showing at the Albany Con to promote the Skylanders game that my kids loved, and my mother, in fact. And they got sketch covers on Skylander comics written by Ron and David. It was really neat, as was this. It drummed up excitement for the game, it made for a unique display and happening in the corner of the con floor room, and gave the developers, who have probably been sitting behind keyboard workstations for months trying to get this game out, an opportunity to greet fans and kind of take a victory lap like rock stars. It was great all around and certainly added to the atmosphere of the show. So thanks, Team Albany Comic Con. You put on another fine old school show. Great to see the gang as always, along with local knuckleheads Mike Spring and Derek Bush and John Fletcher Pasquini and Justin Goldsmith and good old Bill Frank, who made the trip up. Great day. Okay, on this episode of Marvel Noise, WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit will join me for our eighth segment featuring the solo exploits of Nova the Human Rocket. With that pesky New Warriors series, which involved Nova out of the way for good last episode, continuity-wise, we're poised to present Nova's third short-lived seven-issue solo series. This one had potential, but never got the chance to breathe. And hey, you know how this past fall was our 400th 15th anniversary episode? Well, 7 months later, after Marvel Noise hit the airwaves, I began calling in and contributing to the show, making this episode old Steve Raker's 15th anniversary show. And next year, 2024, will be my 50th year reading comics, adding to my legacy stats. Yay! Okay, enough said about that. Let me get Kevin and Andrew on. Hold tight. Or better yet, face front. All right, it's all come to this. Nova segment number 8. Or I guess you could kind of think of it as New Warriors segment number 24 after all that's come before this. But at any rate, it's Nova's third series, the Human Rocket one.
The one where he pretends he doesn't have a different costume.
Now, New Warrior 75 that we covered last time was at the end of 1996, right after Marvel declared bankruptcy and was...
Steve, I don't like these lines you're connecting. New
in the
Warriors
books.
Caused the bankruptcy.
No, they trimmed. It was the trimming of the books once they declared bankruptcy, where it's like now all of a sudden there's a line and anything that was, below that line had to go, no matter if it was a pet project or there were other reasons for developing the character or telling the story, what have you. So a little over 2 years later, in March of 1999, we got Nova's third series. It only lasted 7 issues, though. It ran from March to October of that year in 1999. If you're doing the math, there was no issue that September. There was 2 issues before the last issue came out. The last issue was 1 month late. But it was Nova's 50th issue that the series ended on.
I thought it was hilarious that they made a comment about that. Like, I'm like, wow, they're doing the dual numbering already inside the issue.
Yeah. There's some special sequences related to that we'll get into later. But the creative team of Nova's third series, I mean, this thing was a pet project of writer-artist Eric Larson, who was just the writer for this book. You know Larson. He followed Todd McFarlane on both The Amazing Spider-Man and the adjectiveless Spider-Man titles, and then it went on to co-found Image Comics and do Savage Dragon for like 35 years.
He stopped. But
Larson had a Nova pitch for a serial in Marvel Comics Presents
in the late 80s. Remember, Nova hadn't been used after the ROM stuff for quite some time, not until New Warriors popped up. But so when the Marvel Comics Presents anthology was going on, Larson's like, I love that character. Well, I'm going to bring him back. He had been depowered, right? But he had made that choice at the in the ROM book. But he had an idea. He was going to empower him again and tell a serial, maybe two stories worth. And it was rejected when the New Warriors was greenlit. So Larson toiled away patiently, and now with the New Warriors title canceled, he finally gets his shot. So he's the writer and the cover artist. And he also inked one issue over guest artist Corey Turnbull in issue number 5. Then we've got penciler Joe Bennett, who I think at this time, this is pretty early for Joe Bennett, and very, the artwork is very slick, I gotta say, but a little bit too Carlos Pacheco-y in style. And Joe hadn't really come into his own quite yet, but I mean, the anatomy, the heroic anatomy and the faces and everything are all, you know, fine. They look great.
I don't know. I felt the had that 90s ladies with a lot of leg kind of vibe to it, which, I mean, if you're at the time, that was fine. It's just weird because dear listeners, some of them know I was kind of out for a lot of the 90s. So going back to that without any nostalgia or memory of it or whatever, it's pretty intense. I mean, I saw some of it in the early 90s, but I guess I just blacked it out. So when I go back now and I'm like, whew, they got stems that go all the way up in these books.
What if you remember?
Fantastic Four guest starring issue.
Yeah, particularly in that one.
But and they also decided that they were going to ignore that Rich really bulked out in the New Warriors and hit the weights and go back to his kind of lean teenager Spider-Man he looked rather than the I'm a guy that's always at the gym.
The inker I was not familiar with, Armando Durruthy, although Abel Al Milgram inked the last issue, number 7. And the colors were by Steve Olif and letters by frequent Larson co-conspirator Chris Iliopoulos. With Larson doing the covers, I thought those were really fun and worth talking about a little. The first issue was a wraparound cover with the Nova figure being an homage swipe of Larson's Nova piece for the Marvel trading cards back in the day. Redrawn, which I thought was cool. And then on the backside, Namorita and Nebula and even Doc Ock are there.
Yeah, that Namorita really confused me. That made nothing made me go back and read or check out like 10 other comics. Then when Namorita shows up and I'm like, okay. I'm like, is he ignoring continuity? Did something happen?
What I enjoy.
I just have to know. And then I'm like, no, it looks like he's read all the books because there's a lot of references.
Yeah.
Is basically the build for Speedball Namorita. Basically all the people on the back cover except for Rhino built pretty much the same muscular frame. It's just whether they had the gender specific equipment or not. So that part I like. But it's fun to see like this kind of here's our cast of characters that you're gonna be having fun with as the like this is your Nova world. Because you know, last we saw they were in the weird Spider-Man family and all that business. So it's good to kind of draw the slate, even though we feature two Spider-Man villains. But anyways, you know.
I also thought it might have been a little bit of a Easter egg of a nod to the fact that he wanted to do the story originally in Marvel Comics Presents because the wraparound color or cover really matched that design, right? Where there would be a kind of a feature image of one of the characters on the cover and then on the back that would be like the other three characters or four characters that had stories in the issue too. You know what I mean? Yeah. Before it became a flip book. But then with these subsequent issues, Larson had a different inker ink each issue. The cover, at least. Terry Austin inked the second issue that had Diamond Head and a wife beater.
You know, it's so strange when you notice the bag is the same height as the other bags, but it's like really wide. And then you're like, what happened this that month, like at the shop or whatever, like there's a manufacturing defect. It's just weird personal.
You got a golden age bag.
You get these issues out and you're like, what's the story there?
Give him a silver age bag.
Yeah.
We ran out of current. Issue 3 had the Red Skull on the cover and was Danny Mickey inks.
Red Skull, a classic Nova villain, Steve, right?
Yeah. We'll get there. The fourth issue had Art Tebert inks and showed the Condor defeating the Fantastic Four. The fifth issue had Tim Townsend inks and had Spider-Man front and center. So it was cool seeing Eric Larson doing Spider-Man, soon to be Hollywood hero.
Yeah, really nice.
4 years later.
Like the Spider-Man is more time and love is put into the Spider-Man than the Nova on this one. As well, you know, he's the big gun, but also the corner box Nova is pretty... like very, he's skipping leg day for sure. But got that thin waist.
The sixth issue has, I believe it's Al Gordon inks. Although it could be the series inker Armando Durruthy. And that has Nova facing off against the Sphinx. Yes.
This one made you super excited.
For sure. And the last issue had Dan Panosian inks. With Venom, with the Larson stylized tongue wrapping around Nova's wrist.
Isn't the coloring wrong? Or did they think, like, the early 90s when they put it green? Oh, that was this the silly 90s. It's supposed to be saliva.
Yeah, extreme close-up.
I'm like, something, it just looks wrong.
It also feels to me weirdly almost Howard Chaykin-y with, like, the teeth. Of Nova, not of Venom, but yeah, I got a weird vibe and the kind of he's crushing the helmet and all the little break marks and everything. It's fun.
Not the helmet, blue blazes.
He's crushing your head.
So the New Warriors title had ended with issue 75 and the restoration of Nova's powers, which was how the New Warriors title started too, right? And Marvel was climbing their way out of bankruptcy, as we said. Bob Harris was the editor-in-chief, but Bill Gemas would take over as publisher and install Joe Quesada just a few months after this series concluded, which kind of affected future plans as well. And interestingly, Nova was also at this time part of writer Marv Wolfman's lawsuit against Marvel after the Blade movie came out in the 90s and was a hit. In 97, Marv sued for creator credits for Blade and Nova, but lost in a decision that was announced just a few months after the series was concluded.
That's so bizarre.
But the real fun of this issue to me was it returned Rich Rider and Nova as close as you could in comic books 30 years later, returned him to the Bronze Age status quo of the first series.
A mistake.
I don't know. He's got his pals back from the first series, but they're updated. Right,
Steve, big problem. You know, we need caps to be wearing caps at all time, and there are some scenes where that's not happening. How are we gonna know which one's which without the guy wearing his caps all the time?
I don't know. I thought it was like Larson read our minds that, you know, caps was Roger. He didn't need to be called Cap. He wasn't going to be wearing a cap. He didn't feel the need to wear a cap all the time. It's like, no kidding, right?
Steve, that was his only personality trait.
Oversized clothing or something.
Weirdly, though, the colorists made him darker and darker as the series went on. And by the seventh issue, he was pretty much looked black or heavy Hispanic.
That's weird.
Waiting for that limited series to come out. Whatever happened to Caps?
Whatever happened to Caps? We're waiting for a lot of limited series to come out. I like that weird Diamond Head flashback story that keeps on popping up that they've never done.
No, they can't ever say that. It's got to be always the mystery. It's been built up too much at this point.
In the first issue, too, setting up the new status quo, you've got Rich's old love interest, Ginger J, walking into a Marvel Burger joint. And she's greeted by Rich and Bernie Dillon, one of his old friends from the original series, who both work there. And Bernie's like the manager. And the Marvel Burger location replaces Uncle Fudge's ice cream shop, where they hung out in the first series, right? So it's like now they're just sucking soda straws instead of milkshake straws.
Not Uncle Fudge.
I guess the Nova delivery service ended with a bomb, right, Steve?
So yeah.
After he was delivering explosives, that was no longer a usable business.
And guys,
that was a great business idea, though.
It was.
In my hand, I still have a promotional visual for the series. It's a gift certificate voucher for a free Marvel burger.
Yeah, I have that too.
From my comic shop back in the day. Yeah. Or it was,
I was
on
wondering
the,
if that came with a wizard or something.
Or maybe it was on the register.
Oh, could have been.
You know, next to the register, that kind of a thing where they used to put, you know, when they'd have like little index cards or something with checklists or that kind of stuff.
Yeah, those were always neat.
I have a bunch of that kind of stuff hanging up in the bunker, including the Marvel Burger voucher. And Ginger, I should have said too, she's married now, but it doesn't look like happily because there's apparent signs of abuse.
No, that was handled. You mean the scene where he just about murders her with a giant axe or whatever?
And yeah, she's like,
honey,
that was just
home.
A misunderstanding. Yeah, it was. He just was a little. I'm like. He would have killed, like, I don't think you can take a hit with an axe and just shrug it off, but I don't know.
There's also a new character, Jennifer Smith, who's this untouchable, beautiful freshman blonde girl from L.A. And that the guys are all gaga over her. And Rich is back living at home with his folks and his younger brother and attending undergrad with the guys. His attitude is also way improved, right? He's back to being somewhat likable. He deals with his friends more nicely. He's self-deprecating. He shows concern for Ginger's well-being and her marriage and stuff.
Yeah, he's more awkward, too. He's got that. It really felt like they wanted to have that teen kind of awkwardness. And, you know, obviously a low-paying, low-status job, too. And always putting his foot in it. This does feel like it's more like we're going to put him back on the Peter Parker route, except replacing the family. More like this is going to be Peter after he goes to college and less of the Aunt May stuff.
All right. Now, Kevin, let's get to the elephant in the room here. In the first issue, the New Warriors are shown to be breaking up. Night Thrasher moving to Seattle, maybe trying to intern with Stark Fujikawa, he says.
What? This is also what led me on a thing. Because once the series ends, I mean, the likelihood that your team is going to stick together or you're not going to revert, like, that's always a thing. That's always a stressor. And then you see here, oh, we're going to break up. So then I had to dig out every other appearance. And like, yeah, in every other appearance, it seems like, oh, we're just on the verge of breaking up. And they'll make cameo appearances. There'll only be a few members. And I'll be like, yeah, I guess if there's only a few members showing up. But I'm like, Is that the writer's choice, or is that just the artist saying, hey, I don't want to draw the whole team here? But at least they sort of stick around in Marvel and in backgrounds. But I'm it seems weird that Night Thrush is like, hey, I have this whole company and foundation, but I'm just going to work as an intern for Tony Stark. And I'm like, that seems like a downgrade.
Thresher had to be taken out of the dynamic to... otherwise, the team would just go there. You know what I mean? The team can just fall back on that all the time. Because you've got Vance Astro and Firestar, both with the Avengers in the Busick Perez Heroes Return era. And Speedball and Rich both have school and part-time jobs, but they'll still hang, you know. And then Namorita? Well, she's got that fishy blue chimera skin.
That's awesome.
She shows up and it's like a dry, cracked shell-like exterior, and she's in pain, she can't sleep, she's itching, she's like scratching, and like the scales are coming off on like Rich's shoulder. She shows up and lays it on thick to Rich that, you know,
it was all downhill.
Me, you know, hold me. And he's like, ah, he's like repulsed, which ticks her off and she's gone.
It was all downhill since she got rid of the revenge armor, Steve. You know, that impossibly weird asymmetrical nightmare to draw armor that they put her on for two issues.
So they get rid of Night Thrasher and they put on like this Lightning Lad kid. Not better than Night Thrasher.
No. In the second issue of Nova, Namorita sheds her exterior shell, and she returns to the classic Namorita look. Ta-da! Then she shows up at Rich's and totally wants him to suffer, so she grabs Bernie by the lapel and brings him into his room and sleeps with him.
You know, I remember there was some early message board internet rage over the treatment of Namorita in this book.
She's Namor, though. Isn't that a total Namor move?
I mean, I was, after New Warriors 75, I was all looking forward to some more cosmic Nova adventures and seeing Namorita more, and this doesn't exactly win me over.
But
yeah, I didn't think it was great, but I did like the Diamond Head seemed like there's a lot of potential there. Like, yeah, I feel like that he's a good, there's some stuff you can do with that character. And like I said, I don't want to know what happened on that planet. I like the kind of history of it and keeping him going as a foil.
I thought they told us.
He's strangely powerful, but also can be a little bit more street level. Like, it's a nice power set that you can credibly have him in kind of a low end or a high end, and you don't feel like he's Daredevil defeating Ultron.
Yeah. You know, this is the second time I've seen an ad or Marvel talking about how the Spider-Man movie has been untangled and they're going to make it.
In 3 or 4 years, it'll be out.
A lot of us were still mourning the Nicholas Hammond-led Spider-Man TV show, Kevin. Yes. Why didn't they invite him back for that last like Spider-Man reunion? Oh, sure, Tobey Maguire and those guys are free. What, was Nicholas Hammond busy?
So even though Rich and Nita broke up, and even though the New Warriors broke up,
supposedly
a scaled down group of them are hanging out in issue 3, right? Nova, Rage, Namorita, and Speedball.
Yeah.
And Rich tries to apologize to Namorita, but she's not hearing it.
I love that they bust Savage Dragon, though.
Yeah, I know, that's so weird. I'm like, what is Savage Dragon show?
What I want now is for Eric Larson to sue Disney for use of his character without written permission.
He wrote it. His writing the words is permission, right? But yeah, it wasn't his character. It was a Skrull anyway, right?
Yeah, it reminds me of Powers when they have Marvel characters and all these other things going on. What's the 616 and all that?
I thought that was a cool cameo to have the Savage Dragon busted, and it's really a Skrull. And he even mentions I figured if I looked like that cop from Chicago or whatever, I thought that was funny. By issue 6, the New Warriors second series had debuted with a zero issue that was included with Wizard magazine. And Nova has a different costume for that book, Kevin.
Yeah, I know.
But
it was painful, but I was just like, yeah, I'm the biggest New Warriors fan. I'm going to try this book out hard.
Bernie and Caps even bust Richard's chops about it. And he tells him he'll never get into the Avengers if he's already a part of a team like the New Warriors. So he wears a different suit with them so they'll think that it's his sidekick. Kid Nova, right?
Yeah.
Which I thought was actually a pretty fair retcon explanation of why he wore a different suit and called himself Kid Nova when he was with the New Warriors the first time and the second time.
I just find it extra hilarious that his own series is like trying to get around that thing, and then the New Warriors series has to get around that thing eventually.
Yeah, right. And then, but then the fans say no, they want what they want.
Yes.
By then, the book's canceled, both of them. In the last issue of Nova, the New Warriors also make an appearance. They give Rich the news that Marvel wants to publish a Nova comic. And Namorita is shown in the white outfit that she'd wear during this time when she'd be appearing regularly in the Fantastic Four book, the Claremont Salvador LaRocca one, where she was, get this, dating the Human Torch.
I thought that was all right.
It is weird, the Avengers New Warriors connection, because, you know, obviously we had them stealing the Avengers Quinjet, stealing their office supplies. And all,
yep.
Like all throughout the, like, as the annoying kid brother, they stole a member of the Avengers. Rage became that. So, yeah, it is a weird link with the Avengers and New Warriors forever wrestling each other.
And in this book, there's a continuing subplot or theme of Rich thinking that he should be an Avenger, like not a New Warrior. And, you know, he should be in the big leagues and all that. And he kind of keeps that in mind with the decisions that he makes and the justifications he gives for the things that he does throughout this series. There's also a running subplot about Caps talking Rich into playing collegiate baseball.
Is
really so that Caps can be on the team, because he wouldn't make it on his own. But if he can kind of keep Rich showing up to practice and games, then he's on the team too.
Yeah, and then they get into, is this ethical? And it seems like every time you see Rich in doing anything, it's like, oh, he just hit his 30th homer in a row. And I'm like, no one notices.
Yeah, I mean, Rich knows, right? He knows it's not right to use his powers, but Caps pressures him over. I mean, he, you know what he does? He gets in his head by saying that it'll impress that Jennifer Smith girl.
I know that's always weird, because I'm like, he says, yeah, I got to impress. And I'm like, but Namorita's right over there. Oh, I really want to see this blonde, but Namorita's.
He needed to join the Unlimited Class Wrestling, Steve. That's still around.
Speaking of unlimited power, the other last subplot that kind of went on through at least the first four issues of the series was these power fluctuations or surges that Nova was having. Yeah. He accidentally permanently paralyzes Ginger's husband at the end of the first issue after she calls him when he was coming through the bathroom with an axe.
Jack Nicholson. Over the top. Because she's like, oh, it was okay. And I'm like, lady, you get hit with an axe. I don't think you just bounce back from, I mean, you're a superhero. Yeah, but like the civilians, like an axe is a pretty, I mean, maybe you're okay. I'm no doctor, but I know you're probably not just like using the I walked into the door cabinet excuse with a axe wound in your head. Yeah. But it seemed,
I fell down the stairs with an axe.
Yeah. It seemed like weirdly, I guess they just wanted to unwind the marriage that we had seen from the Nova series. But it seems like they could have just unwound it with like, oh, we got divorced or like rather than all this. But I guess they wanted like, will they, won't they kind of the Peter Parker thing where he's got his ex is mad at him. His old girlfriend is married. And then the new unattainable chick. So he's got three on a rotation.
Another one. And the other one that wants, that is interested in him, that he rejects so he can go out with the other one.
Yeah. But, you know, he's always got a lot like Parker, you know, no luck or whatever, even though he's got tons of
luck.
Hot chick. And he just completely ghosted the woman, the law school woman from the New Warriors. So that was another hot blonde or whatever.
Yeah.
Like what Larson said about the Namorita relationship, that, you know, in a team book, it works to have a couple of the characters have a relationship with each other, right? But then in a solo book, if the character has a relationship with another superpowered, if they're a superpowered couple, it puts them above everybody. That he was trying to reground him into, and so he threw the old Parker luck at him with the juggling the different possible opportunities, but each one of them, none of them are exactly right, right?
Hearing is you don't want to write a story that's uncommonly written. But what I hear is, hey, that's interesting. There's not a lot of stories like that.
Well, he threw... Did you see him? What he did to Ginger's husband? I mean, he threw him, like, through the wall, out the door, onto a car. And then, like, I could hear the car, like, beeping, like, the security alarm on it after he, like, landed on the car.
So I thought, is he going to go to... Is he going to turn himself in? Like, it's going to be the whole justice storyline.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah,
it is. Trial.
It's another Vance Astro dilemma.
Yeah.
But I mean, Vance Astor troubles are not good troubles to have, by and large.
No. And that, I guess he didn't like the... Yeah, I don't know. I'm just fine with the guy having a steady... You know, the Fantastic Four fell into that read. And I know in the beginning there was a little bit of enamor, will they, won't they? But they pretty quickly fell into them getting married and having kids. And that book seems to do okay. My opinion only. You can have, you know, happily, romantically involved superheroes and still crank out some decent work. And
well,
all them married
writer,
Spider-Man.
I mean, maybe you haven't explored all avenues of your writing, so you're only good at writing certain things, and you're just like, I gotta stay away from married characters or whatever your situation is you're not good at. So
I think he was trying to do what he thought was right for Nova and what would make Nova, the Nova series, be more relatable, like it was supposed to be in back in the 70s when it was supposed to be in the tradition of Spider-Man.
See, I hadn't read the 70s series except for one issue at this point, but now that I know that, I'm like, I didn't really like that series. Get this series, I can see why I wasn't really digging this series. And I can also see that my evolution as a reader, where I'm like, even though I like classic stuff and a mix of stuff, I'm like, I wanted to see that movement forward, not backward. So it's funny that I think I lasted a few issues, and then I'm like, Spider-Man is like on the cover for number 5, so I probably picked that one up. Not sure where I got 6, 7 I wasn't on board for, and I had to buy that as a back issue. But reading through these, it's funny that I lose interest a few issues in, sort of just like I did when I was buying these back then too. So
I don't mind the resetting as much. I just feel it was so over the top, like the Ginger and her husband, like everything was turned up to 11. I don't know that you needed that to, you could just kind of reset it and have it be more fun. But that also might be where I'm at. Like, I want more kind of fun and less angsty, murdering husband-y sort of comics.
I mean, New Warriors was kind of like that too, though.
Oh, they had their heavy-handed political stuff in it, but yeah. They also kept it, you know, Speedball was, they always had a goof on the team, and I think that that's a key component of overbalancing, but I complained there about when they were too, some of the political heavy-handed stuff got really like, are we doing the capital R right thing to do here, and all that sort of stuff, where here, it's much, you know, more about the mundane bit about dating is offset with like murderous rampage and all the high stakes that ended up. Cause at one point he's also having to save like a bunch of babies from potentially getting collateral damage eyes. I don't know, that kind of weird, I feel it's a hangover of the '90s where everything has to be extreme and extra danger and extra people are going to die or the stakes
were in
are
the hospital.
11.
He was in the hospital visiting Ginger, who was visiting her husband, and they were attacked, and he was reminded by a doctor to get him out of the hospital. This is a, she's pregnant. So anyway,
I feel like if some of those plots were in Savage Dragon, you wouldn't even blink.
But the other thing is that it wasn't like they hung on this dark thing of this murdering husband for a lot. The first issue, she's introduced with the black eye, and by the end of the first issue, they already have the husband in a coma and done with. So I thought it was done very quickly and almost comically with the whole Jack Nicholson, Wendy, I'm home bathroom bit. I thought it was done in a comic booky kind of a way.
Oh, you didn't think the thing about the mortgage and the kid.
I didn't give it so much thought. I was on to the next bit of action.
Because those,
you guys
that
dwell
bit,
on this.
I'm like, her life is destroyed.
Yeah.
So the power fluctuations, the thing that I was thinking about while you guys were thinking about divorce court, they continue during all these different fights. The powers are surging out of control and stuff, and the subplot is wrapped up in issue 4 when Reed Richards solves the issue with a power dampener, which ultimately returns Nova back to his Bronze Age power levels.
Wah, wah.
Since he had been so OP'd. Now, villains. Here we go. I mean, that when you talk about Nova, you got to think of his rogues gallery, right?
Well, they kind of joke about that, but then when he downplays his own rogues gallery, I'm like, no, you have one,
yeah,
but don't mention any of them.
I actually think that his rogues gallery is very, look, there ain't a lot of Steve Ditkos out there. So this is what you get when you don't have that level, creating the kind of goofy villains, but I like Diamond Head. Condor's a fun, like, yep, super smart, yeah, anti, like, there's nothing they're not as, you know, you don't have one of the all-time masters designing them, so they don't look as iconic, but there's nothing that makes them more silly than any of those great Spider-Man villains that at least I like, Doc Ock and Vulture and all there. They seem in that family, just not designed
Spider-Man villains. In the first issue, Nova briefly goes up against the Rhino and then Doc Ock, who he trashes. But it wasn't really about him fighting them. It was more about showing some brief action sequences and kind of showing Nova trying to fit in among the other heroes, who are like the She-Hulk takes down the Rhino, and Spidey's collar was Doc Ock, you know. And Nebula is the big bad in the first ish. And I like that Larson explains that Zor, who Nova fought in his first issue back in the 70s that we talked about on Marvel Noise 347, she says that Zor was her father.
What?
Which debunks her old claim that Thanos was her grandfather.
Ah.
And also explains why she wanted to destroy Xandar with her fleet back in Avengers 260 that we covered on Marvel Noise 406. It was revenge for the death of her father at the hands of the Nova Corps.
I mean, that makes sense.
And then it also gave Larson an excuse to explain how Nova got his powers back in New Warriors number 1 when Night Thrasher threw him off the roof. Queen Adora, crawling through the rubble after the attack on Xandar, she sends the Nova Force back to Richard Rider on Earth, only he didn't know it until he was shocked into a situation where he had to call upon it. And what's funny is that Adora in the rubble sending the power back to Rich is how Larson's Marvel Comics Presents pitch opened too. So he got to use that scene here, which I thought these were great retcons all around, because they enhance and explain existing continuity rather than replace or erase.
Yeah, I mean, the first issue is pretty solid, and all the stuff like that keeps me interested.
And then you get she attacks Nova with her invading Death Squad, so you get a nice big battle there. Then we get one more villain in issue number one, another character in sequence that was also to be a part of the Marvel Comics Presents serial, and that's the Grinder, who's from an old issue of Spider-Woman. He thinks he's going after the Gladiator, Daredevil's saw blade wearing foe, but the Grinder's got these saw blades on his head, and when Nova knocks him out, the saw blades become like these sharp rolling wheels of death and like roll all over the place and cause all this damage. I thought that was pretty funny.
Little did he know that he would be an app.
Yeah, this is before the app, kids. Spelled a little bit differently. Has very little to do with that Grinder, but
in the second issue, Diamond Head makes his return. Rich runs into him at the hospital while he's visiting Ginger. And Diamond Head was there because he's hired to kill a doctor who's performing abortions.
You know, this is part of my thing with Larson. Like, he decides to have a little cameo of those throwaway bad guys. And he picks Kid Quarry over Skullcat. Like, who in the right mind doesn't take Skullcat? Like, the great name, the great design. No, I take the guy that shoots cement out of his hands or whatever. That's, I think, where it turned for me. I wanted to see Skullcat.
So Diamond Head explains that he didn't die during the Skrull-Xandar-Galadorian War. And he makes Nova remember euthanizing a battlefield of combatants that were suffering from Diamond Head's treachery that led to this chemical, biological, bacterial attack. And the combatants on both sides were suffering. And Nova had to release the Nova Force and euthanize them all. And the Xandarians made him forget that.
And as I was about to mention earlier, what I like about random 90s comics is I forget whatever the continuity is. So it's fun with the cross appearance, because now we're into the like no shield Captain America. So he has that goofy electric wrist shield thing.
Like a hologram
that he had for a while. Yeah. That, so I'll every time, and you know, we're gonna see an Iron Man wearing the armor with the little V, the kind of throwback armor, and just kind of fun, silly stuff where I don't, you know, what do I know what's going on in 99? But you know, it's gonna be some strange continuity.
Nova accidentally shatters Diamond Head into pieces during one of these power surge fluctuations when he's punching him while using that photon shield of Captain America's. And unfortunately, because the series was canceled, we didn't get to see what the next thing was, which was that Diamond Head was going to return as his character that could turn himself into shards and use that as like a projectile offensive capability. Oh, well,
see, they lost the opportunity. What they could have done instead was have a whole series where we follow each one of the shards as it gets turned into like jewelry or whatever, and follow each story of like, oh, this little part was turned into an engagement ring. So it's like a one shot of that.
Someone said that in the letters page. How come Nova didn't just pay for his college tuition by gathering up some of the pieces of Diamond Head?
Because, you know, that would be a fun way to have a bunch of random one-shots tied together.
One-shots? I'm thinking of a whole anthology series.
In the third issue, we finally get to the robots, Andrew.
Yes.
The Red Skull. Nova encounters the Red Skull robbing a bank.
What?
And he has a power surge and knocks his head off. Fortunately, it's just a robot. But he was drawn really good, like a Kirby.
Yeah, this one might be my favorite art style out of... They have a lot of fun with the different robots, and they're done in a over-the-top, but not 90s over-the-top way. So, but more in like an old-timey over-the-top way. So I thought this was where they, for me personally, peaked in the cool design. Because like a Hulk robot, like that's a standard. But he made him really menacing eyes. And like I said, the Iron Man with the V-top.
Yep. And also the Quintronic Man from an old issue of Hulk. A giant robot here piloted by Nick Fury, LMDs. But they're not the ones in charge. This isn't a LMD gone bad story. There's someone pulling the strings in the shadows, of course, from some remote location controlling all of these robots. In the fourth issue, Nova faces a female Sandman character called Quicksand. And again, we get a power surge. He turns her to glass with a blast, and she gets hit by a semi-truck and shatters before he can do anything about it. And I thought it was kind of a humorous sequence.
Do you know how many times a Sandman's been blown into water, put in a vacuum cleaner, turned into this, that? That's just a day in the life for your average sand-based character.
Also in issue four, another villain from Nova's original Rogues Gallery attacks, the Condor. He was from an avian race with wings, a scientist. And in the first series, his goals and his purpose kept shifting, as did his appearance eventually, once the Sphinx turned him into a more bird-like creature. But he was basically like a super genius crime lord who could fly and use a lot of high tech. And here he's changed again. He's more human than the last time, but he's got these like cybernetic talons and high-tech weaponry. Well, the Condor attacks Nova while he's visiting Reed Richards, and he's all attached to Reed's lab equipment. He catches Reed by surprise at first, but ultimately is, you know, he's no match for the FF.
Yeah, I mean, come on. He's smart, but not, you know, Reed Richards smart. I mean, he'll tell you he is, but we all know better than that.
There's also a weird angle introduced where the Condor's avian race, led by the long thought deceased Red Raven.
Wow, now that's a reference. Red Raven
is looking to collect the Condor and the tech that he stole, like for their own safety, to protect their hidden city in the stars.
Well, yeah. All I know is Hasbro / Toy Biz missed out. They put the Condor in the coolest containment unit ever. It's a tube with just his head sticking out on like two like triangle tracks, like a tank. Like that would have been an awesome out of that toy to have. I mean, that thing just looks like a fun little, especially if the tank treads worked. Like that's the type of thing you want them going all the way in for.
Flap your wings now, Flyboy. In issue five, Nova helps Spider-Man fight off a trio of weaponized 90s baddies with Aaron Larson-esque names. There's a guy who shoots fire out of his arms called Firearms. There's a guy who talks about how once these guys are cooked, he's going to eat them, who's called Vampiro. And Bad Axe with two D's.
Needed an umlaut in there somewhere too, Steve, really.
But after four issues of interlude sequences that show him powering back up, in issue six, Nova finally battles his baddie supreme, the Sphinx.
All right, you gotta tell us if this fits with your continuity.
Well, the Sphinx shows up at one of Rich's and Cap's baseball games and just sucks the life out of everyone.
Ow.
Like right in front of Rich. The girl, Jennifer, Caps, they're gone.
Everyone's dead. That's a big death count.
And the Sphinx, he keeps growing bigger and bigger. And he's unstoppable. there is one cool move where Nova flies away from the Sphinx, but he's flying around the world to pick up speed. And he comes up the backside and hits the Sphinx in the back and like knocks him clear into the ocean away from more collateral damage, which is a lesson he learned in the hospital from the doctor with the babies. The Sphinx has powered himself up. He's got the Ka stone in this scepter. And that turns out to be his Achilles heel. Because just as Rich is kind of running out of ideas, he goes on instinct and just flies straight into the scepter, into the Ka stone, separating it from the housing of the scepter. That's like an Ankh, you know? So it's got that round top where the Ka stone was sitting. He separates it from its housing and just flies it right up into the sun and throws it into the sun, and that fixes everything. Boom.
Never to be seen again.
Hey, just throw stuff in the sun. It's the ultimate garbage disposal.
Exactly. Nothing bad ever happens.
But then, yeah, that's how they got rid of the Sentinels, right? They all flew into the sun and we never heard of them again.
But I thought that was the right Sphinx-wise. I mean, he was after Nova because he was trying to get the secret of the, you know, how to break the cycle of his existence and everything. It seems Sphinxy. Yeah.
I miss Sage, so, you know.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. There wasn't time to make this a big, long thing. Nova has to deal with Venom in issue 7, who, as Eddie Brock, hears on the news that his sister was killed during one of Nova's battles.
He has a sister?
Years later, in Venom number 14 in 2019, writer Donnie Cates would retcon that Venom never had a sister. It was just a symbiote mind, like, memory implant thing. But for whatever the reason, Nova and Venom get to fight for 6 pages. But Nova solves the problem of Venom when he flies him to a small island and dumps him in the water there, stranding him.
Hey, is that like, the same island?
Not again.
I know. What's also extra funny is there's an installment of Fastlane in this issue, too.
Yes. I looked at that, too, to look at the Waringo art.
I mean, I know you talked about this earlier, but I do think the weirdest Marvel subplot was always the Marvel Comics tells the real story thing that seems to be picked up and dropped. Like, since Marvel started, it's this weird, like, if you want to use it, you can, or if you want to pretend it doesn't exist, you're free to.
let's finish up on the villains and we'll get into that, because that's what makes this last issue special, and it's a good callback to an early sequence in Marvel and Nova's first series as well. In issue 7, the last issue, Nova also has to deal with Red Raven and his invading force of avian warriors who are set to capture the Condor from prison. And the Condor is like freaking out. He's like, they're going to kill me when they get me. But Nova simply talks the Red Raven down.
Yeah, I actually like that, because he's just like, you know, you could be the solution. And like, if people are polluting, well, if you have advanced tech, like, you could help people not pollute.
And this seems like way too quick and easy of a solution to a subplot that was building. And it was. Issue 8 was supposed to be the Red Raven and avian attack issue, but the series was canceled, so Larson had to wrap it up here overly quickly. But he includes the cover of what issue 8 was supposed to be, with Nova fighting Red Raven and the avian warriors in the letters page. And this is one of the reasons why there was a 2-month gap between issue 6 and 7. Once they knew the series was going to be canceled, they needed to revamp the art and the writing to fit some sequences like that into it.
It's weird that like that Bi Beast guy shows up for like one page and it's like, well, that's it.
Yup. So that last issue was also Nova's 50th issue.
Yeah.
And it, as Andrew was alluding to, there's a meta visit to the Marvel offices, which is a fun homage back to Nova number 5 in the 70s, where Nova went to the Nova Marvel offices and met Marv Wolfman and Sal Buscema. I thought this was funny, though, because when it gives them a lot of time to make some inside jokes and talk about some issues with continuity or how the character's been handled, or like Nova denies to the editorial team that he's the same Nova as was in the New Warriors, that that's just some young imitator.
But I mean, this bit goes to Stan before with Stan and Jack. Like, this isn't, Nova didn't invent the Marvel comics as telling the
right
the history thing. So I always liked that that was this weird kind of thing that sometimes comes into stories and sometimes didn't. So I always enjoy it, but it is objectively weird, and I can see how some people might be like, boy, this fourth wall business is so funny. But hey, they get to draw themselves into the book, and how often do you get to do that?
Yeah. And that they, when he meets the staff, he's like, where's Marv and Sal? And
yeah,
they joke about him not having a decent enough rogues gallery. They're like, now the most important thing is you gotta have a good rogues gallery. And he's like pulling at his collar, like, ooh, is it getting hot in here? And the meeting ends with editor-in-chief Bob Harris saying that, I don't think we can do a book with you, because don't you like lose your powers all the time? He's like, yeah. He's like, if you lose your powers, what do? We're out of stories. But he leaves him with a ray of hope, which turns out to be a dig. He says, but if you ever run into that guy who's imitating you in New Warriors, tell him that we'd be happy to do a book featuring them. Wah, wah. On the last panel, you get to see the hooded reanimator, who is, I guess, the guy who's been controlling the robots. He gets shown with a tease to look for him and Nova over in the pages of Wolverine, which Larson was also writing.
Yeah, Nova and New Warriors kind of repeatedly showed up over there.
And then, unfortunately, though, because of the Bill Gemmis came in and they had kind of a purge of a lot of the creators that were creators that we'd come to know as being frequent contributors to the industry and started shaking things up, let's say. Larson would get booted from the Wolverine book, but not before February 2000, 4 months later, when he could put Nova in and wrap up this reanimator who controls the machine storyline in Wolverine 149.
Yeah, this is another.
Can always come back for the Defenders, anyways, in a couple of years.
Ooh, yeah, cool. This is another fun, weird continuity where, like, now it's the mutants have all lost their power. Like I said, I just love how you tune in and like, what's going on? Like, is this, you know, some virus? What's a mutant registry? Like, what's the current haps in the mutant world that we get to play with?
In this issue, it's Larson writing with artists Graham Nolan and Jimmy Palmiotti, and Wolverine walks into Marvel Burger for a snack, and Rich recognizes him. Then Wolverine discovers the lair of the reanimator and starts fighting his robots, and Nova helps. And he needs the help, Wolverine does, because the High Evolutionary had taken away his mutant powers, and now his adamantium is poisoning him and everything.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the healing factor. It hurts when he pops his claws.
I mean, you can always tell it's Wolverine. He's the only person that ever uses the word bub. I mean...
And I thought the funnest thing of the issue was showing all the different robots that this guy's got in storage, right? The original Spider Slayer with the tentacles and stuff, and the Kree Sentry and Galactus's Demolisher.
And I like how on the Spider Slayer, like the little TV screen that used to have JJ's head is all cracked and beat up.
Yeah. The fight ends when the New Warriors show up to help, and the reanimator guy can't fight because he's somehow lost his powers, which isn't really that well explained here, but hey, whatever. Larson's pissed and he's out of there.
And so, it's fun to see the, like you say, robots are always fun because they can be callbacks. You can have robot versions of heroes and do whatever you need to. I'm always down with some robot Marvel action.
Now, I know you didn't dig it, Kevin, but that was the very short-lived third Nova series, which I thought was building to putting them in place to tell the stories that would have made this a nice ongoing month-to-month book, villain-of-the-month type of book. He had restored him to the Bronze Age power set. He had set the cast up. Unfortunately, it just got canceled, I think. And then, you know, the series kind of gets tainted by everything getting shoved in that last issue. And yeah, not even all the way resolved.
At that point, so.
I liked it, though. I wish it went on for 30 issues. But Nova would be back 6 years later in an Annihilation Nova, a limited series, and then a 35-issue ongoing afterwards.
Yeah, what is probably the best Nova series to date. I say probably because that last Nova series that lasted, what was it, six issues? You know, where it had... Rich and Sam. Yep. That was a really good one, too, but no one cared.
Agreed. But that other Nova series, should we? Could we? Would we? Maybe.
Stay tuned, true believers.
All right, until Nova kicks the buckethead, make mine marble. Later.